As WHAS marches up to its 100th birthday, we're talking to legendary voices that have covered us over the last century. And one of the superstars is a homegrown talent who's the king of Nashville, Tennessee. Bill Cody, welcome back on WHAS, buddy.
January 29th, 1979.
Wow.
I was interviewed when I was 19, and by the time I started in January, I had turned 20 years old. And Van Vance, to this day, holds a grudge, Terry. He says, man, until you showed up, I was the youngest hire they had ever made at WHAS. Now, somebody may have broken that since I was there.
I don't think so.
And I remember Bob Morse was our general manager, and over the entire outfit. Jimmy Topmiller was the general manager of WHAS radio at that time. And I remember meeting Jim and Donna Zapata for dinner one night. Jerry David Malloy, who was the program director that ultimately hired me, and out in Middletown at a restaurant, you know, like an old Charlie's or a Bennigan's or something like that. I don't even recall where it was. And it was probably between Christmas, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so by January, they had said, okay, come on. And I had turned 20 by then.
Well, your voice is unbelievable, and I remember in the 1970s, I'm going to say late 70s, I worked for KQQ in Lexington, and several people on our staff said, have you heard this guy over on VLK, this guy with these pipes? And they said, he's a kid. He's only like 12. And they were talking about you.
Well, I had worked from the time I was 12 years old. I fell in love with this industry, and my dad, who was a Baptist preacher in Lebanon, Kentucky, knew J.T. Whitlock. And J.T., of course, long time, probably multiple reigns as president of the KBA, the Kentucky Broadcasters. But I think at that time was maybe the treasurer, or after he, I don't know how often you could, you know, have that presidency. But anyway, he was just a fixture in our community with the Kentucky Broadcasters. And my dad would tape his sermons on Sunday morning at Woodlawn Baptist Church. And this is back in the days when you had the big cart machines, and he pressed play and record, and away they'd go. And he'd take the tape out after the service. They would play it back at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And then over the course of time, he would go out and pick up tapes and drop off tapes and that sort of thing. So that was my first introduction to this thing called radio that fascinated me from the time I was born, it seemed. And I remember looking through that studio window waiting on my dad, and I saw this fellow that became my first mentor and coach, if you will, and his name was Frank Kemp. Mm-hmm. And I looked through, and I could see Frank in there. And, of course, in those days, you know, Terry, everything was big, the reel-to-reel machines, the boards, the turntables, and, of course, records everywhere, albums, 45s. And I can vividly, as if it were yesterday, remember thinking, I want to do that. And I didn't really know what that was, but I just wanted to do that. And I never looked back.
Yeah.
And that took me to VLK. Obviously, I got out of high school. I worked all through high school. Went to Campbellsville College for a time. And was going to transfer to the University of Alabama, that's where my folks were from, where I was born and moved to Kentucky when I was just a couple of years old for my dad's ministry. And so I got to Alabama, was disenchanted, homesick, and loved the whole bit, came back, and promised my folks, if I can come home, I'll enroll in school somewhere nearby. And so I went to Eastern, and it was late enrollment, and they said, hey, man, you can get in, but you're not going to get any of your classes that you want. And on the way out of the building, very disappointed because I didn't know what I was going to do, what I was going to tell my parents, there was a piece of WVLK stationery on a bulletin board, and they were hiring. So I get home, I tell my dad, he calls JT, JT calls Ralph Hacker. Ralph Hacker says, bring him up here. I went to Lexington and interviewed with Ralph and Jim Jordan, and they hired me. So that's when our paths crossed the first time.
And you were magnificent here you are, you're just a kid, and you were great on VLK, so we all knew great things were going to happen. So let's jump to today. You do everything in Nashville. I know you've interviewed every major star, presidents, kings, queens, you do it all. That had to be a thrill when you got a call from WSM or you got lined up to go on this legendary station.
Yeah, that was always the dream for me, even though my career after Lexington, I wound up going to WHAS, and then from WHAS, just for about 6 months, I had the opportunity to slip in there and take over where Bill Bailey had been on WCII, right, which was the old WKLO, if you remember.
Yep.
And Bailey was retiring, and I got a call from actually a guy who had worked part-time for us at WHAS, Mark Stephen Williams, and he had gone over to be the full-time program director at CII. And he called me and said, man, I want you to come over here and do mornings. So I was really at a crossroads at that point. And I remember Milton Metz telling me, Bill, you're too young to make a mistake. How could you possibly make a mistake, even if it's a mistake? It was nothing I couldn't rebound from, was what he was telling me, even if it turned out not to be the right thing. Well, 6 months in, Jim Jordan leaves Lexington. Who would have thought that would have ever happened? And Jim goes to Orlando to program WHOO and called me and said, hey, how about coming down here and doing mornings for me? And that I stayed that maybe 6 months and then took off to Orlando. That after they sold those properties very unexpectedly, I was down there 85, 86, 87. And then when they sold, they just called us all in one night and said, hey, it's over. Here's 3 weeks severance pay and use of the copy machine. I landed in San Antonio at KKYX, and which was a market legend, country market legend. But it was my first opportunity to really just bury myself in country, which is where my heart had been, knowing that one day I wanted to work at WSM and the Grand Ole Opry. And it was on my birthday, 7 years, I started... during what they think of in Texas as Texas Independence Day and Independence Week that leads up to that date in March. It was this time of year, and I started and worked exactly seven years to the day and left. I got a call on December the 16th of 93 and said, hey, a former WVLK person, who Nancy Stewart, who had done overnights when I was doing nights. Nancy had wound up, of all things, at WSM in promotions and called me and said, you know what? The job you always wanted is available. Larry Black, and people will know Larry from Larry's Country Diner now, most famously, but he's done tons of acting as well as radio and television. Larry resigned today, and here's who you need to call. And he gave me Kyle Cantrell's. She gave me Kyle's name and number. And I was on it, and I stayed on it and interviewed in February, I want to say, and started on April 25th, 1994. So I'm coming up on my 28th anniversary. But I just knew something, you know, how in your life there are just things that you, and particularly as the years pass and hopefully you gain some wisdom, you look back and you just know that that was the right thing and that it truly wasn't just a fleeting emotion. It really was at my core that this is where I wanted to be and this is what I wanted to do.
And suddenly Charlie Daniels is your first guest, and that was pretty good.
He was. I treasure that. Oh, that man meant so much to me. And I knew him, got to know him probably the first time we met was in Orlando during my WHOO years. But, of course, I grew up in that era of Southern rock and roll. I mean, that was in the wheelhouse of my high school years. And, we all wanted to walk like him and talk like him and look like him and dress like him. So he was our hero and certainly mine. And then I got a chance to meet him. And so we stayed in touch, we connected, and he was so kind. I could call him and talk to him and run things by him. And when this opportunity came. He knew my dream. I had shared with him my dream of coming to WSM, the Grand Ole Opry. And he was like the first fellow I called once it looked like everything was going to fall in place, and started talking to him about, you know, what part of town to live in, and you know, seeing if he would be my first guest, which he agreed to do. And you know, toward the end of his life, I had him on "Never Look at the Empty Seats," was a memoir that he wrote, and he gave me the very first copy of that book and signed it for me. He said, "First copy," yeah, signed it. And he looked at me during the course of the interview at some point in time, and he was just talking about those nights that we spent together, and me introducing him at the Grand Ole Opry, and how special that was for both of us every single time. And there really aren't words to express the emotion. I get emotional when I start talking about it. But he looked at me during the course of that and said, "You know what, Bill Cody? You are Opry." What do you say to that?
Exactly.
I mean, you have been crowned.
Right.
In my heart, I treasure that as much as anything that anyone has ever said.
What does that feel like on that old Grand Ole Opry stage? I mean, do you feel like the ghosts of the past? I mean, Elvis, all the other people who went through there?
I promise you, when I get out of my car, of course, it's a suit and tie gig, you know? I get out of my car, I put my suit coat on, and I start up that walkway. And from the day I got there to the present, Terry, you just start to feel this game day coming down the tunnel kind of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk up the artist entrance into the building, and the first two things you see on the wall, and they're spotlighted, are a picture of Minnie Pearl and Roy Acuff. Wow. And every night when I walk in, I look at those and just kind of quietly say thank you, because I actually had the opportunity to meet both of them. And you make your way then into security to check in, and there are those old mailboxes, which people who have taken that tour will certainly remember that, with the combination code on them. And then that's on one side of the hallway. On the other are the plaques with all the names of Opry members, people who've been inducted. And then you just make your way down those hallways to the stage. And it's by the time you get to the stage and you run through your copy and your notes and your introductions, and of course you've run into several artists along the way by then, and the crew, and which is such a family. And when that curtain goes up, as I say, when the big red curtain goes up, it's like you're being levitated, because you're the first person they see. You're the first person they hear. And it is just a feeling like no other, and it never gets old. Never.
That is so powerful. Great to hear from you, Bill Cody. I know you're still married to your high school sweetheart. You got three kids. You're kind of living the dream, dude.
Hey, I got two grandkids now. Our daughter, Hannah, she's got a five-year-old daughter, Lily, and then just gave birth to Isaiah back on December the 9th. So, and Rebecca and I, as you and I are doing in this interview, Rebecca and I are celebrating today. Actually, we got married on February the 29th, but 42 years.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
And that's among the things I did when I was at WHAS. She and I got married when I was working.
All right. Brother, we are so proud to have you in the WHAS family. So happy century birthday to the station, and happy anniversary to you guys.
It was such a wonderful and glorious and golden time to be at WHAS. I treasure it. I truly do. And thank you for thinking of me and being so kind to have me on, Terry.
Bill Cody, the star of WSM Radio. He's also Grand Ole Opry voice. His voice has been on Air Force One, Sirius XM. He's everywhere. Gotta love the guy. It's our WHAS 100 series.